Parents, a new tactic to protect your kids from gun violence that includes you. What Wake County schools want to share with you to help keep your family safe. Then, money troubles at St. Augustine's forcing students to return home. New at 7, a revealing look at the issues over the last decade that led the university to this crisis.
I'm tracking up and down temperatures before our next soaking rain. Which day this weekend could be a washout?
New at 7, Wake County school parents will soon get information sent to them about safe gun storage. The board agreed tonight to inform families several times a school year. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm Ashley Rowe.
And I'm Dan Haggerty. The board wants families to know how to keep guns secure and what the consequences are for failing to do so. WORL's Aaron Thomas joining us live outside of tonight's school board meeting. Aaron, let's start with this. Where exactly does this program come from and how does it work?
Sure. So, Dan, we actually just within the past 20 minutes wrapped up a one-on-one interview with the Wake County Board of Education Chair Chris Haggerty. He explained that he wanted this school district to be modeled off of what other large-scale school districts are seeing. We all know that Wake County Public Schools is the largest school district in the state. Safety is definitely top of mind for many families and leaders here in this district. Now, the district did have several conversations with law enforcement partners. In fact, we saw many of them here at tonight's meeting. You had some folks from Apex Police, Fayetteville Police, Cary, Raleigh Police Department, the Wake County Sheriff's Office, all of them coming together to really show their support for this resolution that got a unanimous approval from school leaders today. So as it applies to families across the district, they can definitely expect a lot of messaging when it comes to the importance of gun safety storage. So you're going to expect that in the form of emails. You're going to see a lot of newsletters and a lot of community events coming up. We actually just learned from Raleigh Police that there's one coming up this weekend.
Got it. Yeah, I am a little curious about the timing of all of it. We're less than a week from the documentary on this very topic that aired here on WREL. It's in the middle of the school year. Why pass this resolution now?
So I'm sure that, you know, what you can attest to on the desk or whether I'm in the field, we've definitely covered our fair share of guns brought on campus. And it's not just limited to Wake County schools, but other school districts. But here in Wake County, we have covered guns on campus from high school level, middle school, and even the elementary school level. And school leaders say that this is not okay. They want to do everything in their power to prevent that. But what they're finding is that a lot of parents or any sort of caretakers, they're not even aware that this gun is brought on campus. And in most instances, those guns are unsecured. That resolution that we just read through, it's about 3 pages. It uses a lot of statistics, including how many American households include a gun and that have a child present. And they say it also explains how many unintentional shootings take place involving a gun. Wake County Sheriff Willie Rowe, he was present. He gave remarks. He says the two goals when it comes to explaining the importance of gun safety storage is about saving lives and ending violence. Dan?
Two important topics there. Aaron Thomas, live for us in Raleigh. Thank you, Aaron.
Well, just as Aaron and Dan were talking about, keeping guns safely secured can be the difference between life and death. And it is the subject of WREL's latest documentary that Dan referenced. WREL documentary investigative reporter Kristen Severance reports on how guns are now the leading cause of death in children nationwide. She tells the story of Genesis Dockery, a little girl who was shot and killed.
She got shot on July 25th and she passed away on July the 27th. And she was just 4 days, you know, short of her 9th birthday.
If this gun is where it should be at, secured in a safe, we're not sitting here today.
You can watch Unsafe, North Carolina Kids Dying from Gun Violence right now on WREL.com.
More paychecks for teachers, upgraded sidewalks, and the return of bus fares. Here's a little bit of what your local government is up to right now. We want to start with those bus fares. Getting a ride from Go Raleigh might not be free for much longer. Today, City Council discussed bringing back the fares. 4 years now since they went on pause during the pandemic. The city says it could use the money, frankly, since they're facing a multi-million dollar budget shortfall. They haven't voted on this yet, but it could bring back those fares a little later this year. In Wake County, thousands of school employees may soon be getting paid twice as often. The school board will vote tonight on whether 6,300 hourly workers should be paid twice a month instead of monthly. A recent survey of qualifying employees found that they would simply prefer it that way. If approved, the change could happen sometime next year. We'll keep you updated. And in Durham, safer streets, better sidewalks. Those could make it into this year's budget. The city held a public hearing about transportation funding and where that money should be spent. People said streets and sidewalks are top of the list. One woman described how she lost her husband. He was biking in a crossing when a car hit and killed him.
It has been my mission that I keep Matt's memory alive and do what I can to ensure our streets are safe for everyone. Please support investment in all in safe streets and fare free transit to demonstrate your commitment to eliminate all traffic fatalities and serious injuries.
The city will also discuss some other important things like removing some of the lead that was found in some of the parks there in Durham and to pay for city staff. The new year's budget will take effect on July 1st.
In vitro fertilization, a hot topic across the country and in our state. You know, there are only a handful of IVF training programs in the country. One of them is in Rocky Mount. This is a look inside Art Lab. It's the largest IVF teaching lab in the world. Between 80 and 100 students travel from across the world to Eastern North Carolina to train as embryologists. The lab director there is saying that there is a shortage in this profession.
You know, the points of IVF and the IVF industry is to help patients and to help people create families. And you have an impact on patients that obviously last the rest of their lives. And I think kind of instilling that passion in the students is what's so rewarding, that they're going to go on and they're going to make such a significant impact on patients' lives.
The lab is located in Rocky Mount Mills, the restored cotton mill campus.
A Confederate monument in Alamance County isn't going anywhere. This is video from a previous rally outside. Here it is outside of the courthouse in Graham. That's where the monument stands. The state NAACP and six other groups, they jointly filed a lawsuit. They wanted to get rid of that statue. Today, though, the state court of appeals ruled the county government doesn't have the authority to remove it. The court says the statue is protected under the Monument Protection Act.
A UNC tennis player is suing the NCAA. This is Reese Brantmeyer. She wasn't allowed to accept prize money in a recent tournament. Her lawsuit argues that a student athlete should not be defined by where they make their money. Sometimes they only get part of the purse, other times they get nothing at all. For example, Brantmeyer, who you see here competing in a doubles tournament, she competed in the 2022 U.S. Open and should have taken home $50,000, but she only got $10,000 because of NCAA rules. The lawsuit seeks to stop these restrictions.
And she has the courage to step forward and say, look, I'm not going to get any money out of this for the stuff that I've lost going backwards. But I'm going to come in and try to change the system for future athletes that are going to be in her situation. I think it's admirable. And I hope the court sees it that way as well.
This isn't unheard of in other sports. Actually, a recent winner on the PGA Tour was a college golfer at Alabama. He had to turn down the $1.5 million prize. But some athletes can accept the money and keep their eligibility. Brian, what's going on here?
Yeah, you know, some college athletes compete and win in the Olympics, and they can keep any cash prize that the nation may give them. Of course, there's name, image, and likeness payments, and then some athletes can receive grants instead of prize money. And then some events can pay athletes an appearance fee, so it's all very confusing.
Now, I can't help but think about NIL money, because they're saying, well, you can earn money through name, image, and likeness, but you can't earn money through these other non-NCAA tournaments. Why? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, this is kind of a vestige of the old system, right, where they weren't allowed to accept money of any kind. And so now as we've changed these NIL rules, we haven't changed some of the other rules to kind of keep up.
Okay, so we know that the NCAA has been on a bit of a losing streak. What are Brett Meyer's chances here in winning this case?
Yeah, well, all she's seeking to do is invalidate this rule, so it would allow these golfers or these tennis players or gymnasts or others to accept the money. The NCAA has lost cases about transfer rules and NIL rules. I would assume that Brantmeyer in this case has a very good chance, and we'll see how long it takes to play out. She's not seeking any damages, and so given the way the courts have been ruling, I'd say the NCAA is probably going to lose another one.
Brian Murphy, thank you for your reporting. Really interesting stuff.
Thank you.
St. Augustine students will have to leave campus next month as the school sorts out all types of serious financial troubles. You might be wondering, How did we get here? Up next, we're going to dive into the last 10 years or so at the university, how the problem has snowballed into the crisis the students and staff are dealing with today. Plus, we discuss why the problem is worth solving, how St. Augustine's unique history informs what the school can and should be for decades to come. Kat?
Tomorrow is going to be a gym. 70 degrees, sunshine, it'll be beautiful outside, but it won't last. And I'll explain why coming up.
Students at St. Augustine's University are going home in April. They're going to finish the semester remotely while the school deals with its financial crisis. We've been reporting on this for months. The university owes millions of dollars to the IRS and contractors. Several alumni groups are demanding that the Board of Trustees resign.
The people there, they were doing it already. Weren't doing a good job managing anything else. I feel like somebody that has a better mindset or different mindset could come in and have a better push.
We're hoping that everything turns out differently and for the better. But, you know, in these kinds of situations, all you could do is try and pray and hope that things, you know, get better.
The resolution also calls for an investigation to uncover the root cause of the financial issues.
And you can't help but think about all the history in this community. St. Augustine's has been around for more than 150 years. And the troubles, though, of the last decade or so have nearly been enough to close its doors. So how did we get here?
It was back in 2014 when the university's president resigned amid controversy, a federal investigation, accreditation questions, and several financial issues. Sound familiar? Fast forward to 2016, and Sachs placed St. Augs on probation, citing financial issues. 2 years after that, in 2018, they did get a little help. The school restructured its finances, buying them some time to get back on track.
There was a little bit of concern about what the future holds or held for this university, but today, of course, a huge sigh of relief.
The plan got St. Augs off probation in December of 2018, but within a month, it lost another president, this time to retirement. It was about a year later, in the middle of the pandemic, a new president, Irving McPhail, took over, just as the school took dramatic steps to stay afloat, reducing staff, cutting $1 million from the budget, and taking on $7 million in COVID-related state and federal relief money. Then, tragically, less than a year into his leadership, McPhail got COVID and died in October of 2020.
Dr. Irving McPhail was infected with the virus off campus and last night died from complications of COVID.
Months later, it was McPhail's wife who took the job as president.
Who better than me to step in with my background and my familiarity with the direction that they were taking the university to step up and write the next chapter for St. Augustine's University.
In 2022, Sachs put St. Augustine's back on probation, and in 2023, another surprising headline, the abrupt firing of Dr. McPhail.
And she told me this all stemmed from an October board meeting where she and a colleague were berated by a board member.
And then things turned ugly. McPhail sued the university, claiming a hostile work environment. WRL Investigates found the school took out a $7 million line of credit and was failing to pay a lot of bills. $15,000 for work on the school chapel, unpaid. $27,000 for unemployment taxes, unpaid. $430,000 for student health insurance plans, unpaid. $598,000 for a new turf field, unpaid. University staff paychecks were delayed, and Sachs voted to remove St. Augustine's accreditation.
St. Augustine's received a letter from the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools. That letter formally notified the school of its December vote.
The snowball has only gotten bigger in 2024. Between January and February, St. Augustine's appealed the accreditation decision and failed. More staff paychecks were delayed, and the IRS filed a $7.9 million lien for unpaid taxes. It's been so bad, students even held a candlelight vigil for the school.
Praying for our university, praying for the current students who are working tirelessly.
This month, St. Augs started the arbitration process, a last-ditch effort to keep its accreditation. If that fails within the next 3 months, legal action could be next. Yesterday, they announced all classes will be virtual starting in April. And that's how we got here.
And it is important, I think, also to mention why this story matters, why St. Augs matters. As we talk about the school's past, we also have to be reminded of the struggles that it went through and some of the incredible successes that it saw. Anna Julia Cooper, for instance, graduated back when the school was known as Oberlin College. She was born a slave, became just the fourth black woman to earn a Ph.D. Joe Holt Jr. is a St. Augs grad. His family was the first to challenge Raleigh's segregated public school system not long after the first black student was enrolled at a Raleigh elementary school. Dr. Benjamin Chavis was an assistant to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He went on to serve as the executive director of the NAACP. Ralph Campbell was the first black person to hold statewide elected office in this state of North Carolina. He won the race for state auditor in 1992. Bershawn Jackson, better known as Batman, was a world-class track athlete. His signature event, the 400-meter hurdles, he won several world championships, including a bronze medal. Jackson later coached at the school alongside George Williams. Williams coached the track team to 16 Division II national championships, and now his name is actually caught up in the school's struggles. He filed suit after St. Augs let him go in 2020. The point is, exceptional people have come from St. Augustine's and have been doing so for 157 years. It's the duty of the school's leaders to uphold that legacy, and it's the duty of the community to ensure they're held accountable.
Today is the first day of spring. The last week or so, it's felt like it, right? But not the last couple of the days. Here's the thing, though. Historically, temperatures are all over the place as we begin spring in Raleigh. The hottest was 93 degrees back in 1907. How about this next number? The coldest day, 11 degrees in 1980. Safe to say we're going to be somewhere in the middle, Kat.
Yes, and that's what we see as we head into the spring months. March and April, a lot of variability. So those of you who were spoiled with last week's weather and thought this was going to last for the next 2 months, that's not the case. We still have a lot of cold fronts to come over the next few months. And our normal low this time of year is still 41. I want to point this out because you may not be thinking it, especially after last week, but it still gets chilly at night. Keep your jackets on hand. You'll need them in the morning and in the evening, as low temperatures will be pretty close to normal for the next 5 days. Tomorrow morning, if you're headed out to get some exercise, it'll be around 40 degrees at 8 a.m. A bright blue sky to start the day, 10 a.m., 52. But we are warming up. It's one of those days tomorrow where it's going to feel completely different in the afternoon compared to the morning. If you want to head out to the playground by lunchtime, it's 63. And then during the afternoon, temperatures climb into the lower 70s. 70 degrees in Roxborough, 72. Here in the Triangle and Rocky Mount, and closer to the mid-70s for Fayetteville and Clinton. It is going to be a breezy day, but it's a warming southwest wind that helps us see temperatures climb. We've got a cold front coming, though, so tomorrow's warmer weather will not last. Make the most of tomorrow with some outdoor plans. During the day, it's beautiful with the southwest wind, but during the evening, we've got a cold front that will pass. That front doesn't bring any rain, but it's going to drop our temperatures on Thursday, 61 the high on Thursday, and then we're going to be watching for our next system to develop in the Gulf of Mexico and head our way Friday. This model in particular running a bit fast with the arrival of the rain. I think that the rain really isn't going to get here until Friday evening, and it will become widespread Friday night, lasting into Saturday. So your updated rain chances, 50% during the day Friday and 80% chance Friday night and during the day Saturday. And then those chances start to taper off on Saturday night. This should be a healthy dose of rain, though. The numbers actually just went up within the past half hour. We're closer to half an inch to perhaps up to 2 inches of rain between Friday and Saturday. So this looks like a pretty significant low pressure system for us to help with the pollen. And the pollen got pretty bad with the wind today, lifting it all up in the air. 54, so temperatures aren't too bad, but overall the pollen is going to stay pretty bad for the next couple of days with the wind. Tonight, grab your coats. Temperatures are falling into the 40s by about 9 o'clock tonight. Tomorrow, you can lose the coats for a few hours during the afternoon, and then you'll need the extra layer again on Thursday, maybe not during the afternoon, but in the mornings. Friday and Saturday, it's a pretty cool rain for us with highs in the upper 50s to lower 60s. We drop back into the 30s for lows Sunday and Monday mornings, and then near normal temperatures return as we head into the start of next week.
All right, Kat, thank you.
So it was a very emotional win for us as a family.
and for all the fans of Wolfpack Nation.
It's not your average sports swag shopping spree. Up next, meet the NC State fans who have been waiting on this for years.
We got lots of calls tonight. 962 people got their tax questions answered today through Five on Your Side's Tax Pros on Call. These federally licensed tax professionals took calls for 3 hours tonight, offering free information, answering so many questions about the upcoming tax filing deadline. If you missed out, Five on Your Side has several links to free and low-cost tax services. Just hop on to WRAL.com.
NC State fans still on cloud nine after their upset win over the Tar Heels this past weekend. Today, they got to shop for some ACC championship swag in person. Waiting a couple days for the shipments to come in was nothing compared to the decades-long wait for an ACC title.
It means everything, more than you know. I've been waiting since 1987 to see another one of these. Got to watch it with my son, who's a sophomore at NC State. Never seen it in his lifetime, so it was very emotional win for us as a family and for all the fans of Wolfpack Nation. So I'm sure we're going to be selling a lot of these t-shirts this week.
What a story.
That is great. So cool. I know. Joel Langley and other Wolfpack fans were shopping at the Red and White store in Raleigh today. The NCAA tournament starts this week. You can track live score updates, times, and TV information on the interactive bracket on WRAL.com. Just search the word bracket.
We'll see. Keep that Cinderella story going.
I know. Hey, I've got them going pretty far in my brackets.
I like it. Thanks for making WRAL your choice for local news.
Our next newscast is at 10 on Fox 50 and 11 on WRAL. Have a great night.
Keep watching WRAL News over the Air Channel 34 and Spectrum Channel 1257.